Welcome, dear podcast listeners, to another episode of Between the Bubbles. Of course, I'm Darren.
And I am Brayden. This is episode 59.
Really? We're at 59 right now?
This is episode 59.
59? Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Who would have thought?
I only know that because I decided to start renumbering them with the new version last week. So last week was episode 58. This is 59. I already have episode 60 ready for you next week, listeners. We recorded it late at night. It's an Elektra review, and it's hilarious. Yeah. And it may have my favorite Matthew review of all time because he starts it by going, pew, 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 for about like 15 seconds. And then he finally starts talking. So.
Are you serious?
It's a winner. It's a winner.
That is a winner. Okay, well, some things that I've read and news that I saw that really stuck out to me. One is Punk Rock Jesus. I think we have to talk about Punk Rock Jesus because,
for sure,
holy cow, that is every single issue. I get more and more. I think I understand what the whole message is, and then he switches it up on us. So there's that Thor and Fantastic Four with Marvel now. Mm-hmm. You know, Avengers Assemble. Anyway, but you know what? Something before we talk about what we read. You know what? I'm gonna throw in some new stuff that I just saw today, just like an hour ago. Have you seen this, Brayden? The new Marvel announcement of Age of Ultron.
Yes.
Okay. So what are your thoughts? Let me give a brief synopsis. Brian Michael Bendis has basically said that Marvel is going to start a full blown crossover and big major event. Not that long, in my mind, right after they had Avengers versus X-Men.
Well, Age of Ultron was supposed to happen this last year.
Oh, yeah. It got teased in what? Let's see here. Mighty Avengers 12.1 and the Moon Knight series.
Yep.
That he was doing. So, but did they ever say why it was stalled?
Lots of reasons. The biggest reason is the person who's doing the art and the person who's doing the art for the first five issues is a meticulous artist who is notoriously slow and late.
Oh.
it's gorgeous. I looked at I saw the preview panels, and it's gorgeous looking, but notoriously late.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And he's only doing the first 5 out of 10 issues.
Yeah, well, and it says here that they are releasing bi-weekly. Well, no, let's see.
Yeah, it's going to be bi-weekly. It's going to be March to June. It's going to be 10 issues long.
Yeah, 3 issues in March and April and 2 in May and June. That is crazy. So, did you notice, though, on the cover, who the one person left standing? Did you know who that is?
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye! Yeah, I mean,
you could see Hawkeye in Ultron's reflection, yeah.
That is so, to me, a little bit bizarre, because you have Captain America on the ground, or being, you know, his face being smashed, and Iron Man's face being smashed by Ultron, and you have the Hulk on the ground, and looks like the Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Well, that's the thing. This was written 3 years ago, so this takes place prior to Superior Spider-Man, prior to the relaunch of Hawkeye, prior to Avengers vs. X-Men.
Yeah, so how are they going to do that with continuity, then?
It's going to be out of continuity.
Doing its own little thing?
I think so. I don't think you can say that it is a part of continuity. I think it's going to be an out-of-continuity thing.
I just noticed Captain America's shield is broken.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. And you have Iron Fist, Spider-Woman, Thor, maybe Red Hulk, like his little face. That is, wow. But it's interesting that Hawkeye's the one left standing. That intrigues me. So, I don't know. Are you interested in picking this up, or?
I don't know. I'm tempted. We will see how I feel about it when March comes rolling around. But I'm tempted to pick it up. Because this was supposed to be Bendis' goodbye to the Avenger books.
Yeah.
That's what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be his way to say, alright, I've been writing these books for 12 years now. Bye-bye.
It will be interesting. I don't think I'm going to pick it up. I don't.
Well,
you didn't pick
up AVX.
Yeah, found that I am not a huge fan of Marvel crossovers. Like, they just kind of fizzle out to me.
And I think part of that is due to it being written by so many people. And so I wonder if this one will work better due to the fact that Bendis is the only person who's written it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm hopeful for that. I don't know. We'll see how I feel in March when it comes rolling around.
Yeah. And then the other thing that you told me about today was who you feel like Superior Spider-Man's actually going to be.
This was a rumor I saw online, and I don't know if it's, I don't lend it any credence. I saw it on Comic Vine. but I don't lend it any credence, but I would be totally okay with this. There's a lot of rumors that Ben Reilly might be the Superior Spider-Man. For those of you who don't know who Ben Reilly was, back in the early 90s when there was the whole clone saga, basically, Ben Reilly was created to replace Spider-Man. Like, from an editorial standpoint. In the comics, he's one of the clones of Spider-Man, but he's the perfect clone of Spider-Man. Because a lot of the other ones had had developmental, like, problems. Like, they had, like, scarring. Like, Kane, who's the Scarlet Spider now, he had, like, horrible scars all over his face, and he was, like, mentally deranged. And, like, a lot of them would, like, just fall to, like, they would, like, disintegrate. But Ben Reilly was a well, do you remember that Alpha issue where there was disintegrating Alpha clones?
Oh, yeah.
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
That the Jackal is the one who cloned Spider-Man.
Oh, that makes sense.
And Ben Reilly was the only perfect clone of Spider-Man that he was able to achieve.
And so
there was all sorts of complicated storylines back in the 90s, like how Ben Reilly was actually Peter Parker, and the person who was being Peter Parker was actually a clone. So the one who married MJ was not Peter Parker, it was clone Peter Parker, and real Peter Parker was off being Ben Reilly.
Whoa, wait, what?
But then that all got retconned away, and it's complicated. The backstory of Ben Reilly is super complicated, but the important thing to know is that he was the Scarlet Spider back in the 90s. And I know a lot of people hate that outfit, but I love it from, like, a nostalgia point of view. Do you remember his outfit?
It's a blue... No. See, I'm not too familiar with Scarlet Spider. I'm not huge familiar with Marvel stuff.
He had, like, red tights and like, a red tight suit. And then over the top of it, he had a cutoff hoodie.
Okay, I'm Googling it right now.
Google it. The cutoff
hoodie. Oh my goodness, that is so 90s.
That's
oh
the name
goodness.
Of this episode, cutoff hoodie.
Oh my goodness.
It's so 90s, right?
Oh, it's like that whole, like, you know, the cutoff sleeves, like the punk, you know, like street guy that they'd always portray in the 90s. Because do you remember, like, was it Final Fury? Like, this fighting game that you'd play, or was it Streets of Fury? Something. Where you're three different characters, and in any video game in the 90s, there's always that one character that had the cut-off sleeves, Jean Jack, without fail.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
And that's what this is.
That's Scarlet Spider. He eventually got a better outfit, but then he just kind of disappeared. And some people thought that he died, but other people think that he's still alive, and he could be coming back as Spider-Man. So I know that a lot of people are really upset at the prospect of Peter Parker no longer being Spider-Man. I am one of them. If there's one person who could take his place as Spider-Man, in my heart, it's Ben Reilly.
Yeah, that would... Well, it makes sense. And it would
Because he also has all of Spider-Man's memories, so he essentially is Peter Parker without the emotional baggage of, I used to be married to MJ, now I'm not because we sold our marriage to the devil to resurrect Aunt May or some bull caca like that, whatever
exactly.
Happened there. But, yeah. Some people had speculated that Kane, who is no longer evil and has his scars healed and is the current Scarlet Spider, was going to come be the Superior Spider-Man. But that series is still ongoing. They're not ending that series anytime soon. It's selling well enough to keep it going. And it gets pretty good reviews. I liked it. I picked up the first arc. I thought it was a pretty solid book, but I just couldn't afford to pick it up anymore.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense, too, with the cover of Superior Spider-Man with Spider-Man kissing Mary Jane. I mean, if he has all the memories, he's obviously going to have those feelings for Mary Jane. And who knows... Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, where is he right now in continuity? Is he even around?
He has been gone for the past decade or so.
Yeah, so does he even know that Peter Parker, the real Peter Parker and Mary Jane were even married? And that they're not anymore? I mean, if he has these memories married, yeah, who knows? It could be very interesting.
Who knows? All I know is that Ben Reilly, I would be okay with. I really like Ben Reilly as a character, and he might really actually fulfill what he was created for, which was to replace the aging Peter Parker so that Peter Parker could become more of a mentor to this younger, unencumbered Spider-Man who could go off and have totally new adventures, totally new relationships with totally new people.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's...
I think it's as good a theory as Peter Parker changing his name. I think it's a better theory based on things that Slott has said, because Slott has said things like, oh, Peter Parker will still be in the book, but he is not Spider-Man. So I figure if anybody's going to have Peter Parker's blessing to be Spider-Man, it's going to be Ben Reilly, because they used to work together.
Yeah. I don't know. Marvel Now, Marvel Now to me has been, I don't know, because like Thor...
Thor was phenomenal.
Did you read it this morning?
It was phenomenal.
I thought it was good. I really liked it.
The art, Darren DeVore.
Yes, true. The art was amazing. But once again, this is going back to my gripe. Someone who watched the movies, who wants to get into Thor, it's not a good jumping on point.
Oh, I disagree entirely. I could hand Vanessa a copy of that of Thor issue 1. Vanessa, my little sister, who's been on the podcast, for those of you who remember. I could hand her Thor issue 1, and I bet she could hit the ground running and be like, okay, give me more.
Well, no, I mean, like, it's not like there's a lot of backstory, but it's not...
I thought it was totally new reader friendly. Now, I also read Iron Man this morning. Iron Man was sort of reader friendly. You needed to know what Extremis was. If you have any background in Iron Man and you know what Extremis is, then you could hit the ground running with this one. So it wasn't perfect for someone who's coming straight from the movies, but anyone who's read the comics or who knows anything about comics is going to know basically what Extremis is. Because, I mean, that was a huge, huge storyline in the Iron Man mythos. Because
yeah.
You've never read it, but you know what Extremis is.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I knew that it was something to do with his body, and I wasn't too familiar with
some it. Some sort of biomechanical modifications.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you need to know. So, and you probably got that in the recap page. I didn't read the recap page, but you probably could have gotten it out of the recap page. I didn't think it was as good of an issue. I didn't love Iron Man 1, but I thought Thor 1 was great.
See, this is my thing. We could talk about now with Avengers Assemble number 9. It wasn't the Thor that people who watched the movies are going to expect, and it might be like, well, this isn't...
And that might
what
be
is
true.
This?
I don't know, though. Young Thor was the lusty, vivacious Thor in the movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Middle-aged Thor was the Thor that we've seen in the comics, and so I think that it's a good transition that you see young, lusty Thor, and then you're like, oh, this is him grown up. Okay, I can follow that. And then to see him old and wizened... I thought it was perfect. I really thought that Jason Aaron hit it out of the ballpark with that first issue.
So are you going to now purchase Thor?
I don't know. I just read it. I didn't buy it this morning. I read it this morning. I borrowed it from somebody. I don't know if I'm going to buy it or not because I don't know if I can afford it. But in terms of the Marvel Now's first issues that I read...
It's the best one.
It may be the best one.
I think, it is.
In terms of the issue ones, which... Because Fantastic Four was good, but it wasn't, like, blowing me away.
No, there's some great moments with Ben Grimm, you know, the whole internet thing and trying to delete stuff
on
the internet. Other
best
people posted.
Best moment of the week in any comic, maybe. Even funnier than all that stuff that happened in Avengers Assemble was that.
I don't know.
Do you know how to delete stuff from the internet?
I don't know, because Avengers Assemble number 9, when you have Spider-Woman using her pheromones to make the Hulk make her a sandwich, and it was just so... I mean, the sandwich was so crappy. I mean, it was so bad.
You're missing the important part. You're missing the important part. Why was that scene specifically so wonderful?
Because it was a role reversal?
Subverting gender expectations. Yes! That's what Kelly Sue DeConnick does in her comics so often. I could write a whole paper about how she uses... how she inverts tropes. And that's one of the things that she does... beautifully here. She subverts that trope, because how many pages are there on Facebook of woman shut up and get me a sandwich? There's like dozens of them. It's like a big thing in popular culture to jokingly be a misogynist and be like, oh, make me a sandwich, woman, get back in the kitchen.
Oh yeah, to, you know, go pregnant and barefoot making stuff in the kitchen.
Yeah,
like
I mean that's a big meme on the internet right now. So what does Kelly Sue DeConnick do? She takes arguably, I guess there are people who might disagree with this, but she takes the most masculine, most tough, biggest, strongest character in the entire Marvel universe.
Well, and like when people speak as, you know, go make me a woman, don't they sound kind of unintelligent?
Exactly.
And that's what, I mean, the Hulk, Bruce Banner's intelligent, but Hulk, I mean, how he speaks is very...
Yeah, but that's what...
You pick up like a big, dumb meathead.
Yeah, so Hulk is everything the misogynist wishes he was.
Yes.
Tough, strong, can beat up anybody. And what does he do when he is under the spell of Spider-Woman's pheromones? He makes her a sandwich with hippie peanut butter on it.
And don't you love his grin when he hands it to her? I mean,
Oh my gosh. So I cannot say enough good things about Stefano Caselli's artwork in this issue. Oh my word.
So this is the thing, is like, of all the Marvel Now one, or Marvel Now issues, not Marvel Now number ones, but Marvel Now issues.
Of all the Marvel Now issues, this is the greatest comic I've read all year.
Well, and this is the one that, well, for anyone who did like the movies, who's not into comic books, this is the only title that I would feel confident saying, go pick up that title, that will make you a believer in comic books.
Exactly. Exactly. This is the jumping on point for someone who's never read a comic book before.
Yep.
If you've read comic books before, or if you're more familiar with the characters because you've at least read their Wikipedia pages, then the other Marvel Now stuff will work for you.
Oh, yeah. You could definitely get into Thor. You could definitely get into Iron Man with Extremis. Even if you're just someone who, you know, you'll play a lot of the video games. I mean, that's how I know a lot of the, well, I don't know a lot of the Marvel stuff, but my knowledge comes from Marvel Ultimate Alliance, and then knowing the new characters, and then going on Wikipedia and finding out more, and then I would follow the reviews of comic books, even though I didn't read them at the time.
And so too with Fantastic Four. I think that, I mean, because Fantastic Four is enough in the cultural milieu of America that you could go into Fantastic Four number one without knowing anything. And you would get enough from the splash page that you could hit issue one and say, okay, cool, I know enough.
Yep.
So I think that it works as a starting on point for new readers. Better, I think Iron Man is the one that works the weakest.
Oh, definitely. There was
in terms of being for a person who's never read a comic book before.
There's the most history in Iron Man than any other, and than any of the other Marvel Now titles, I felt like.
Although, so I have to admit, that scene where he gets through security just by shaving, and nobody recognizes who he is just by shaving, pretty funny. I gotta give Kieran Gillen props for that scene.
See, I don't remember that scene.
That's how he sneaks into the AIM meeting, is he shaves his mustache. Because he makes a joke about how world's most famous mustache, you shave it off and nobody knows who the heck you are.
Oh, that's right. I wonder if it's poking fun at Superman putting on glasses.
I'm sure that
probably.
Probably. At least on a subconscious level, I think Gillen is subverting that trope. Because, again, I don't know how anybody with half a brain in the DC universe doesn't know within 20 seconds that Clark Kent and Superman are the same person.
Oh, yeah, well, no, so I've been watching the Superman the Animated Series, and it's so funny because, you know, he runs into a tent, then he flies out. It's like, how is no one seeing this? How is no one seeing him fly into a building, dress real quick, and fly right out? I mean, it's just
exactly.
So...
Whereas in the Marvel Universe, basically anyone who doesn't wear a mask is public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, who doesn't wear a mask that people don't know their secret identity?
In the Marvel Universe?
In the Marvel Universe. Maybe the Hulk, but that's because he looks so different.
But the Hulk is a mask, though, to Bruce Banner, because it is so different.
Exactly. So that works, that functions as a mask. But everyone knows who the Fantastic Four are.
Yep.
They're public. Everyone knows who Steve Rogers is. It's public. So he could wear, he can go without his mask in public, and everyone knows who the heck he is.
Well, don't people know who Wolverine is?
I think basically. And well, here's the thing: in the DC universe, I feel like so many of the characters still play with that old trope of something by day, superhero by night.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, DC. This is a thing of the DC characters. You know. It, you know, Superman is Clark Kent when he needs to be, Superman when he needs to be. Dude, Captain America is never not Captain America.
But what
he might
Spider-Man,
have a t-shirt on. Spider-Man's the only one I can really think of that still does that.
Because everyone else really doesn't. It's like, that's who they are.
Everyone else, that's who they are. And that's what makes Spider-Man so ridiculous. Like that mention, like that thing, that panel in Avengers Assemble where they ask him to be on a team and he's like, I'm on like six teams right now. And you're like, and you also work at Horizon Labs. How do you function as a human being, Peter Parker?
Because his life is always in shambles, though. It makes sense.
His life is
like,
always
way too busy.
He's the only one who tries to maintain the two lives still.
But what about Matt Murdock though with Daredevil?
Oh, there's another example. But they're few and far between. Luke Cage and his family, his wife and daughter, just live in Avengers Mansion at this point.
Well, everyone knows Luke Cage is Luke Cage. I mean, did he even have another identity? I don't think he did.
He was called Power Man back in the day, but everyone knew that Luke Cage was Power Man.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like a nickname, it felt like.
Yeah, so I just think that's an interesting division between the old stable of DC stars and the old stable of Marvel stars. Because other than Peter Parker, especially of the old, like, 60s guys, other than Peter Parker and Matt Murdock, the rest of them are all like, everyone in the world knows that I'm Iron Man. Or, like, yeah. Now, in the coming up issue of Hawkeye, if you've seen the previews for it, he is, like, Clint is at a barbecue on his roof of his building, and his neighbors are like, I got an Avenger at my barbecue. He's like, nope, I'm not an Avenger, I'm just a normal guy. And then S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, like, jump down to the roof and they're like, you're needed now, we need you now, Hawkeye. And he's like, okay. And then he's like, see, I told you, you're Avenger. He's like, I'm still not an Avenger, burp, burp, burp. See, everybody knows that he is, even if he's like, well, oh, I'm not really one, burp, 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 burp.
Well, okay, but here as well, doesn't everyone also even know that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, and even Peter Parker is Spider-Man?
But,
well, Peter Parker not so much.
That came out, but that was all reversed. Peter Parker's was.
Oh, yeah. But, well, okay, so now, that's interesting, because now really only Spider-Man is the only one that people know, because people really know that Matt Murdock is Daredevil, even though he tries to play it off.
Yeah, he still tries to have the dual lives, but half the city believes that he is Daredevil still.
Yeah, so that even furthers your point.
So, I just think it's interesting. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Wow. Interesting.
Anyway, so, speaking more Marvel Now stuff, Avengers Assemble, everyone. Everyone, go buy that freaking book right now.
It was amazing. It really was, like, one of my favorite comics I read this week.
It was... It and Punk Rock Jesus were the two highlights of my week.
Mine was Batman.
See, I liked Batman, but it wasn't as good as Avengers Assemble.
Ugh, I loved Batman. Oh my gosh. Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo are... And Batgirl was really good, except for the art change. That kind of ruined it for me.
Art change did it again. I know, right?
Really, really, but... Oh my goodness. Batman... Joker is crazy evil, and it is so... Because this is another horror comic from DC, basically, right now.
Yeah.
This is a horror
comic.
And
let's be straight. Let's be straight. No one can draw the Joker the way that Capullo does.
Yeah, I mean...
All these other artists try to draw the Joker and fail miserably.
They do. I now can see why Greg Capullo was so upset when the Joker was revealed on Batgirl and they did the solicits, because it is nothing like... Oh, it is just disgusting. To look, I'm looking at it right now. It is disgusting. It is
so gross.
But so
much more effective in Capullo's art.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the mannerisms of the Joker as well that he does is just like nothing else.
Oh, yeah. It was a stunning...
I mean, Joker is like a flirty girl in this.
He really is.
He's a flirty girl.
Now, granted, I felt like the backup wasn't nearly as good as last issue's backup.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Jock's art was amazing, because Jock's art is always amazing, but the writing wasn't quite as top-notch as that one was with Harley last month, but oh my word, the Joker. Oh, the Joker.
Well, and then as well...
I do have one gripe, though.
What?
I have to say this gripe. If the Joker's face had really been removed... He wouldn't have lips anymore, because the lips are all attached to the face. So how is he saying half of his vowels, or his consonants? So many of your consonants are dependent on your vowels. Your D's, your B's, your P's. Or I guess your D's aren't, but your P's, your B's, your M's, your F's.
His lips aren't connected to his mouth at all.
They're not. They're connected to the mask.
I don't know.
So...
Don't ruin this for me, Brayden.
Why should you be talking like this? Because this is how you'd have to talk if you couldn't move your lips at all.
Maybe that's what the squiggly lines are for.
This is me talking without moving my lips at all.
It kind of ruins the scariness, though.
So, yeah, you can just imagine the Joker talking like this.
But, okay,
or you
but
can imagine him not talking like that.
But if you notice, his I mean, the words are very, you know, kind of grittier. So maybe that's what it is.
Maybe.
But the one-page panel of just...
Well, here's the thing. A good ventriloquist can make it sound like he's saying all of his P's and B's without actually saying P's and B's. So maybe the Joker was trained as a ventriloquist in the last year.
He totally was. What else has he been doing for a year? Nothing much.
Finding out who the hell Batman is.
Yeah, that's true. That is so...
And who everyone is that works with him.
Ugh. Who do you think is going to die?
I don't think anyone's going to die.
Some people think Tim Drake.
He's the only chance, because he's the only one who doesn't have a book that's led by him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the other books are all selling well enough, they ain't going to cancel them. So you can't go killing... Can't go killing Red Hood. Can't go killing Nightwing. Can't go killing Batgirl. Can't go killing Robin.
I think so, Tim Drake's going to die.
Tim Drake might be dead because Teen Titans is not selling very well. It's a team book, so it's easy. He's easily replaceable.
Exactly. I think he's going to die. I really do. I don't think it's going to be Alfred. I hope Alfred isn't blind.
That would be something.
That was creepy. That was so creepy.
Yes, it was.
But anyway. Okay, so Punk Rock Jesus, though. Brayden, what are your thoughts on that?
I have all the feels in the world about this book. This is... I love this book more and more every single issue. I know that you didn't like 4 as much as you liked the previous 3, but, oh man, every issue I love this book more and more. Sean Murphy's art.
This is the strongest issue I felt like.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Sean Murphy's art.
Amazing? With the shadows?
Oh my gosh. The way that he can play with negative space and shadow and can make some of the most emotive faces. Like,
oh, I know.
I've never read or seen anything drawn by Sean Murphy before, but I want to look up his entire back catalog after this series.
Yeah, I mean, this is... And the interesting thing as well is I have thought every issue, I'm like, okay, now I know what the...
And then you get subverted every issue.
Every issue. I mean, I thought after last year, like, okay, this is an anti-religion book. And now it's like, oh, this is like an anti-religion slash anti-religion slash science slash commercialism slash just the... You know,
it's a commentary on every facet of American society.
Yep, it really, really is. Because we get so extreme with our religion that we do push people away and that we get
extreme with everything that we do.
Oh, yeah, because even the anti-religion, you look at the whole science thing about how they're still selfish. I mean, who is it about? Let's see. Was it the twin sister of Chris? I don't remember her name. Yeah, because she wants to go save Chris, and then the scientist doesn't really want to because, you know, they could focus on the reduction of greenhouse gases or whatnot. So, you know, how the science maybe loses itself in humanity, if that makes any sense. Then you have the whole thing of Slade, who thought he was really doing something good and giving the people what they wanted, and how that totally backfired and just is destroying them. I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Do you know what's an interesting thing that I just realized about this book, and I need to go back and see the former issues to see if this is truly the case?
What?
There is no narration.
There is none.
In this book. Every single word is a spoken word.
I didn't even realize that till right now.
If it's a voiceover, it's because it's the news people talking. But there is not a single narration box in this entire issue, and I would wager probably the entire book.
I don't think there is an entire book. I think, honestly, it's all spoken.
That's impressive. That speaks to a confidence in Sean Murphy's writing that he doesn't feel the need to hold your hand and guide you along. He lets his pencils do the talking.
So you don't need to be guided along in this at all.
He lets his art do the talking, and that is what happens when you have one person do a book from beginning to end, man.
Well, and that's also what happens when you have an artist or a writer who is also an artist, because the same thing with Jeff Lemire.
He knows how to do it.
Yep. And
if he's not the one doing the art, like in Animal Man.
Well, in Animal Man...
He's not doing the art in Animal Man, but he knows how to guide his script in such a way that it doesn't, like, his artist knows exactly how, and he trusts his artist enough to get those things across.
The thing that stands out to me the most is when he got the powers to actually, when he uses the animal powers it actually kind of turns into the animal demic. Do you remember that part?
Oh, yeah.
It could have been very expository, like, oh, wow, I'm turning into an eagle and I feel the power of the eagle or whatever it was. It's like, no. You just know he's a rhino. Yeah, you saw it. He's a rhino. Like, do we really need to have explained to us that he cannot be a rhino? No, we just saw it, and it actually made it so much more powerful. And that's what's going on with Punk Rock Jesus. Because you see the expressions on the faces. I mean, it's very engaging. And we don't go into the mind, you know, of Chris in the sense where he is explaining it to us. But we know what he's thinking because what other people are saying, what Chris says, but also the facial expressions. Like, when Chris walks off after visiting that... was it the NAC?
Uh-huh.
The woman who was injured in the hospital.
Uh-huh.
He's starting with the Jerusalem. How he's going to. Let's see what he says here. Once we finish touring the United States, we'll bring our message worldwide. The flak jackets will hit every Christian hotspot on the planet, starting with the Jerusalem, the birthplace of Christianity. And you see the look on his face with how just determined and cold he is. Like, we didn't need an internal monologue to tell us that how much he hates Christianity in Jerusalem, and granted it's been explained with just previous events, but it would have been very easy with any other writer to go into a monologue about that, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Didn't, and it was more powerful, and then, ugh, just, you and I both think he's going to die at the end of this.
I was going to say, prognostications, I'm afraid that he's going to die.
I think he is. I really think he is.
I don't know that there's any other way you could end this thing.
No, he has to die. And, I mean, if he doesn't ruin the story at all, it'll be interesting to see if he doesn't...
I don't know. I honestly think Harry Potter was ruined by the fact that Harry Potter didn't die.
And you think Dark Knight Rises was ruined because Bruce
Wayne didn't die? And I think Dark Knight Rises was ruined because Bruce Banner didn't die.
Bruce Wayne.
That's what I said. When you telegraph a death so intentionally and then you don't follow through with it, I just think you're weak. Like, have the narrative testicles... to go the full force, you know? Like, go the whole way. Go the full Monty.
And I'm okay
with it.
Bring
the thong. Just go full Monty. Come on, guys.
I do think he's going to die, though. And I think it would be symbolic because...
I think Murphy has the guts to do it, though.
And Christ died. I mean, if you believe what you will about him as either the Son of God or just some guy who...
If you believe in a historical Jesus, you know that he had to have died. Whether he was resurrected or not is superfluous.
He died. So I think for the story, Chris has to die. But this is, and as I've said before, I am a religious person, but I do not find this book offensive at all. I find it so...
provocative.
Yeah, because the thing is, you start to see why people do get annoyed and really upset and turned off by religion. Because all the stuff they present here with the religious fanatics... I see all the time. You see in your personal, not just even on TV or media sources, you sometimes see it in your personal life.
Yeah.
Either friends that you know, associates that you have, maybe family members. And I mean, my family members are normal. They're not religious zealots. But I mean, I have people, you know, either at school or just people I've associated with at different jobs I've had where you know that they're very religious, and just how they talk about people who are different from them. What they would determine as sinful lives or whatnot, how they judge them is like, wow, that, you know, that's totally going against what Christ taught.
Yeah.
Totally against it. So it's been very enlightening to me to see what the other side views religion and how much damaging organized religion has been in the world. And it's like, you know what? I can totally see where they're coming from. It's been so enlightening. I can't even express it. Like, this is a phenomenal
book.
It's
such a great book. In my heart, it may beat New Deadwardians for the best miniseries of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like nothing else.
Speaking of, this is just talking off the cuff. I think we should do a year-end of awards ceremony. Just on our podcast. Best storyline, worst storyline, best single issue, worst single issue, things like that. We'll talk about it later. I think that'd be fun.
Let's do it. I say we totally do it. I already have some thoughts in my mind of what I'd choose.
Good. So what else did you buy this week, my friend?
Frankenstein Agent of Shade was amazing. I am heartbroken that this is being canceled by DC.
But that's okay. You can get your Mant Kit where else?
Mind Management.
How'd you think about issue zero?
Okay, you're saying that it was the weakest of Mind Management?
Oh, without a doubt.
I thought it was amazing. This, to me, was why have I not been picking up the series this whole entire time?
If you feel that way about the zero issue, just wait till you read issues 1 through 6.
I don't want to get the trade paperback. I am going to go in my comic store. I was supposed to come up this past weekend to see Brayden and record and go to his comic store to see if they had it. Unfortunately, life got busy for both of us and we weren't able to. We're actually Skyping right now. We're not even face-to-face, which kind of sucked.
But they can probably tell because, you know, Skyping is different sounding than us in the same room. But I loved Mind Management. I loved the cover.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like the two comics were, like, taped together.
Yep.
And Max, it just...
good writer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And once again, you have a lot of the art speaking for itself, and he is drawing Mind Management, so...
And painting it.
Painting. I just... wow. So, I love that. Green Lantern Corps was okay. I'm actually going to drop this series after the Third Army.
Green Lantern Corps?
Yeah, I love the concept, but...
You love the idea of space police, but it's just not working for you?
No, not working for me, so I'm just...
Well, give Nova a try when Nova launches. That's space police. Or Guardians of the Galaxy. That's space police.
I'm going to give that one a try. But I'm going to drop a Green Lantern after Rise of the Third Army. I did drop Red Lantern and New Guardians, because I just don't care. Superboy, Hell on Earth, was boring. Tell you just, and this is a side note, after we decided not to do the weekly reviews, how much more
trimmed
just to drop stuff that I don't like?
You trimmed. I did too. I trimmed a lot.
You think so? All new X-Men, once again, not a good jumping on point in my mind for new readers, or even
it was a horrid jumping on point for a new reader.
Great comic.
But it was great.
It was awesome. I'm not going to keep going, but I thought it was a great issue. Amazing Spider-Man, I thought it was kind of boring.
Yeah, it was a boring end to kind of a boring arc, but yeah. I'm hopeful for this last three issues.
Amazing Spider-Man, but I am going to pick up issue 700, but I am not going to get the other ones.
I did like that little cameo by Harry Osborn.
That was kind of tender, too. You know, maybe he's come a long way since his bug days.
It's true.
So, he had a goatee. I was not expecting that. Thor and Fantastic Four we talked about. What else did I get? Batgirl we already mentioned. The writing of Batgirl was awesome. The artwork really ruined it for me.
Yeah.
Not ruined. Creep number 3. This is a great series. Creep.
Oh, it was a terrifying penultimate issue. We got one last issue to go.
This is my thoughts. I think I'm gonna guess here. I think what happened is the grandpa, I think he molested the two kids.
Oh, I've been thinking that since issue 1.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just thought that in issue 2, and now with issue 3, I'm like, yeah, he molested those kids. I really think so, which is be interesting to see how that plays out.
Spooky.
So what did you read?
Besides all those things you mentioned, I also read Extreme X-Men, which was another great issue of my favorite X-book, because Dazzler's awesome. I also read The Ultimates, which was wrapping up the United We Stand arc with a bang, sort of a bang and sort of a fizzle. It was good, but you could tell that they were trying to get it done with one issue left, less than they should have maybe gone. Like, if they'd had one more issue, it would have been better. But no time to talk about it. Red She-Hulk was really solid. There was lots of really awesome fight scenes.
Really?
If you like fighting, then Red She-Hulk's the book for you.
Is this a series that you're going to now follow, do you think?
I'll stick through this arc. I might be done after the arc, but, dude, watching her and Captain Marvel beat each other up, sign me up.
She fought Captain Marvel?
Heck yeah, baby. She fought a bunch of the Avengers.
Oof.
Let's see, what else? Buffy the Vampire Slayer was boring.
Are you going to keep getting that series?
What's that?
Are you going to keep getting that series?
I don't know. I feel totally torn. I have been buying this series since 2007 or something like that.
Really? So do you feel like you're giving up on a child?
I kind of do, because I have all 40 issues of Season 8 and the 15 issues of Season 9. So I feel like that's more comics than any other book that I've ever purchased.
See, and that's how I feel about Green Lantern Corps. I feel conflicted. Because I started with the relaunch in 2005, 2006, whenever they, you know, did the relaunch. And it's just like, but I've invested so much time and so much story, and I love the concept, but...
Welcome to my feelings about Buffy.
Yeah, I have empathy towards you.
Yeah, anyway. Conan the Barbarian was great because it's Brian Wood week. The Massive was also great because it's Brian Wood week.
Speaking of Brian Wood, Star Wars officially comes out January 9th, and it's just called Star Wars.
I know.
Amazing. So
I'm
anyway.
Excited. I already put it on my poll.
Me too! Okay, keep going.
And then I picked up 3 Image books this week, 2 of which were like, whatever, and 1 of which was awesome. I picked up the first issue of Great Pacific, because there are a few reasons to not buy a first issue of a new Image series, especially this year. So I'm like, first issue? Yeah. It was a cool concept. It's about a guy who fakes his own death to go and turn the floating pile of trash in the Pacific into land.
Whoa.
Basically create his own country. It's a cool concept. Issue 2 of Point of Impact. This is a miniseries that's a black and white miniseries that, in terms of art, looks great, but it's just kind of superficially written. It's not... It doesn't delve into the characters very deeply like some of the other series that we've read. I'll stick it out through the next 2 issues because it's $2.99 and it's only 4 issues long. So, yes. Sure, I'll pay the other $6 to get the next 2 issues, but it's nothing great. It's not like it's one I'm going to be mentioning in our end of reviews. And then lastly, but certainly not least, Saga Chapter 7.
I've heard amazing stuff about it.
Every time this book comes out, it's one of the best books I read the month that it comes out. It's so good. It's so, so good. Brian Vaughn has such confidence in his writing and in his world building. And Fiona Staples' art, and again, she does everything. She does the pencils, she does the inking, she does the coloring. And it's just astonishing to look at. And so... they are going to continue the cycle where they do an arc and then take a 2-month break, do an arc, take a 2-month break. And it's brilliant, because during the 2-month break, that's when Issue puts out, or that's when Image puts out the trade paperback of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the trade paperback came out a month ago of the first 6 issues.
Wow.
And it's brilliant, because they put it out for $10 and they're like, hey, do you want to come read the highest reviewed book of the entire year? It gets more 5-star and 10 out of 10 reviews than any other book that has come out this entire year. Oh, the first 6 chapters is $10.
Now, I heard that there's like Cyclops testicles or something on it, or...
Oh, yeah. You do see a monster's big sagging cancerous testicles, but...
So
that's,
gross.
That's the kind of book this is, and you just take it in stride, because that's the kind of book this is.
Now, what makes it good?
This is a fully realized universe that Brian Vaughn has created. It feels like, you know how sometimes, especially a sci-fi series, you feel like sometimes they're trying too hard?
Oh, all the time.
And they're like, you are trying way too hard to create something that's like out of the norm. You're trying so hard to not be Star Wars that it just seems like you're ripping off Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's like it is his fantasy stuff, too.
I feel everything like tries so hard to not be Tolkien that it's just ripping off Tolkien.
Exactly.
Anyway, Saga is fully realized. These races that you see throughout this book feel like real... like, if the conflict feels genuine, it... oh, the art is just astonishing. The fact that it's narrated by the little infant is so... I think... it gives you hope that things will turn out, because she's narrating it, so she's gotta... she's narrating it from the future, so I know she's gotta survive somehow. There's so much, like, interesting dynamic of race, of family, of prejudice, and all of these things combine in this sci-fi epic that is a fully realized universe.
So just in a genre that can feel so generic and so bland sometimes... it is actually fresh.
The rocket ship is a tree.
Wow.
They got it from the rocket ship forest. Their babysitter is a disembodied ghost girl.
So basically he just goes like all on just totally different on everything.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's astonishing. It is astonishing. If, again, it takes a strong stomach, because there's a lot of violence and there's a fair bit of nudity in this book. But... go if you're okay with those things, dear listeners, go buy that trade paperback.
You'll not get that you did.
That and the $10 trade paperback or profit are the two books that you'll be the gladdest you purchased the entire freaking year.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh, again, a book that you need a strong stomach for. But this is why Image is the company to beat this year, is because they're putting out things like this every month.
Yeah, I'd have to say, like, Image...
I mean,
this is something
you've got Saga, you've got Prophet, you've got Glory, you've got Manhattan Project, you've got America's Harvester. Got Powers.
Is it Harvester that you loved?
Revival?
Oh, who is the one where they take the organs?
Oh, the Harvest. Yeah. That's an Image book. Revival is an Image book. They are just putting out quality stuff single month.
This is the interesting thing. Image, it doesn't feel... The sense that I get from Image is that they just let the writers and artists do their thing. It's like, you know what, you want to do it?
There's no sense about it. That's exactly what they do. So you have a complete autonomy. And then you present them an idea. They say, go do it. If we like it, we'll publish it. And they give you complete autonomy. And so you're able to do whatever you want. That's how you get series like Bedlam, Fatale, Glory, all of these... It Girl and the Atomics. These are all things that could never fly at DC or Marvel.
And why won't DC and Marvel... Think how much money they can make if they actually did not interfere and let the writers and artists do their thing.
I don't know how much money they'd make.
Because George Perez...
Image doesn't make as much money as these guys, as DC and Marvel do.
Well, that's because it's Image. I mean, how many people go buy independent comics? That's just not what we do as an industry or as consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're reviewed incredibly well all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you have the...
Like, I'm looking at the publishing list. Because in the back of every, or almost every issue of an Image book, they just have a bunch of the covers for things that are coming out this month. And here are things that have either come out and I loved or are going to come out and I betcha I'm gonna love. Bedlam, issue 2. Issue 1 was great. Fatale, issue 10. I love that book every month. Glory, issue 30, which apparently has been canceled.
Whoa, what?
Glory's canceled. They're doing 34 issues. They're going to issue 34, that's it.
Ugh, are you heartbroken?
Yes and no. They're letting Joe Keating tell the story he wants to tell.
That's good.
He's gonna be able to finish it. For the few of us who are getting it. But, so I got 4 more issues of that book and then it's done. Which is disappointing.
Yeah. But this is my point, is if you had the power of DC and Marvel, because people would buy it because it's DC and Marvel, but letting the writers do their thing and go creative with the characters that they want to explore, different aspects, how much better, because how many titles does Marvel and DC have that just get panned every month?
A ton.
Tons.
I mean, for every Batman that DC has, they have a Deathstroke and a Grifter.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, because I know with George Perez on the Superman, it's like, I couldn't tell the story I wanted to tell because I always had people coming in and tell me I needed to change this and change that and blah, blah, blah. And
yep.
This crossover. And it's the same thing with Marvel. I mean, I'm actually reading Marvel Comics, The Untold Story by Sean Howe. Or maybe it's Howie, it's Howe. Phenomenal book, like, to see just the meddling that goes on and how people are, with the smaller titles, like, they didn't really care because they just let the artists do their own thing, and they didn't sell as well because they weren't as well-known, but
yeah.
Fans loved them a lot more than
that's why I'm afraid that they don't do it, is because they don't think it'll sell as well if they just give creators that autonomy, because, like, Image hasn't even cracked a 10% of the market.
Yeah.
Not even 10% of the market. Because 65-70% of it is split between DC and Marvel. They each get about a third of the market. And then the other third is split up between how many other publishers?
Oh, Dynamite, Boom, Dark Horse, IDW.
Image.
Yeah.
Kaboom. And various and sundry other small presses. But Image has never even... This may be the year, because they're doing so well this year in terms of sales. Like, the first issue of Saga went to a 6th printing or something like that.
Oh, yes. Saga's been doing well.
That's because it's phenomenal. It's one of the best ongoings I buy. That and Prophet. I honestly, like, every time I read one of them, I'm like, no, this is the best one. And then I read the other one, I'm like, no, this is the best one.
I just... It would be interesting to see... Because even with the Marvel one, for the artists were able to do their own thing, they didn't sell us because they were on lesser titles.
Yeah.
And people weren't buying them anyway. And
yep.
I just, if you were to have that mindset with the big one, like, I think honestly, Batman, or the editors of Batman are letting Scott Snyder do his thing. I really do. I think they're just kind of like, okay, have at it, and he's produced great stories.
I think they are to a certain point, too.
I think Grant Morrison with the Batman and Robin run that he did with Dick Grayson, the whole thing with Final Crisis, just the Batman run in general, it's very, very different from your typical Batman story.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It would have been... It'd be interesting to see what people could come up with.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I would love if we could get that sort of autonomy. But, you know, it comes at a price. Because how often do I say, this is not a book for kids?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Oh, that's very, very true.
And so DC and Marvel try to keep their titles at least appropriate for teenagers.
But you can do that. I mean, as a writer, would it be that hard to not put sex or, you know, a bunch of, you know, harsh swear words in there?
Probably.
You know, I mean, you could still have a great story and explore what you want to explore without having someone naked or, you know, dropping the F word, mm-hmm. you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't know either, but I don't know. It's just a thought that I have, because that's the way Image rolls. They are not afraid to rate their books M.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, no, tell me the last time you bought a book by DC or Marvel that was rated M. I'll tell you when it was. It was Punisher Warzone. And that was probably the first one you ever bought from DC.
That's
Marvel.
Rated M?
Yep, Punisher Warzone's rated M.
Oh, it shouldn't be.
Oh, it is. Punisher usually is.
Yeah, yeah, I just didn't see anything that was M in it.
M.
Maybe later on, though, who knows.
It's just like, ratings on movies. It's arbitrary and ridiculous.
I know, right? Very interesting, but...
Anyway, well, we should probably wrap this episode up.
Yeah, I gotta go to bed.
Yeah, me too. Well, I gotta edit this so I can put it up tomorrow.
Well, now you know, dear listeners, that we're recording this late at night.
Just like next one. Just wait till the next time when we call it Between the Bubbles.
Latest. Have some interesting, funky music on in the background. Some exotic stuff. What?
I already edited that one up. It's got cool music. This one will have good music, too. I'm trying some new things.
Yeah, I like the music on the last one that we had. Yeah. When did we record the electric? Was Electra like a 10, 11 at night?
Yeah, it was after the dog had gone to bed. We had finished watching it. It was like 11 o'clock at night when we recorded that.
Oh, that makes sense, because we went on like a random tangent at the end that I was probably my favorite part of that episode. But
yeah, the episode is titled, My Mom is a Potential Hoarder. So...
And I love my mom, and
that may or may not be what we talk about next week in the Elektra episode. You'll hear all about it.
But just a disclaimer, my mom doesn't listen to this, but I love my mom, and she actually has, because she has retracted her hoarder ways. I mean, she's done a lot of getting rid of a lot of crap, but we talk, it was fun. It was a fun conversation.
It was fun. So enjoy it next week, friends.
Anyway, well, your podcast.
Have a good Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Be grateful, and this is the thing. Remember, during the holiday season, no matter what holiday you celebrate, for all of our listeners in the United States who celebrate Thanksgiving, don't forget to be thankful for things that you have, because it feels like the day after Thanksgiving is Black Friday and everything that we're thankful for goes out the window, and then we're just greed and consumerism just engulfs us.
Amen.
You know?
My rule for this weekend, everybody, this is the rule. It comes from Will Wheaton. It is the first rule of Will Wheaton. Don't be a dick.
Don't.
That's the rule for this weekend. Okay, guys?
Be kind. And the thing is, you're starting now the holiday season, which is all about being friendly and giving. And come on, really? Do we need to get in fights? Do we need to go crazy over stuff that we really don't need?
You can get a Blu-ray player 2 weeks later for the same price, guys.
Just, come on. Anyway, our wish to you all. Be happy. And anyway, so happy Thanksgiving. Listen to Matthew and his dear, amazing review of Uncanny X-Men. And until next
time. Issue 9 this week.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Or is it issue number 8? It's issue number 8.
Okay. I don't know. But until next time, happy reading.
Hi, my name is Matthew. Today.
thought this issue was awesome. What was your favorite part?
My favorite part is where they beat Eunice.
That was pretty cool, huh?
Yeah!
You know what else I think you liked?
Yeah.
Remember what happened to Iceman?
Yeah.
Tell us.
He turned into his ice crystal.
Yeah. He doesn't look like a snowman anymore, huh?
Yeah.
So, what happened with Beast in this one?
He decided to not be an X-Men anymore.
What? He decided not to be an X-Men? Why?
Because he got attacked by these bad guys that thought he was a bad mutant.
Mm-hmm. And then he made that ray gun, didn't he?
Yeah.
Why did he make the ray gun?
I don't know.
Who did he use the ray gun on?
He used the ray gun on Eunice.
What's Eunice's power?
She is untouchable.
Untouchable? So what happens if you try to punch him?
He just goes thump.
It goes what?
He just thump him.
Ka-thunk?
Yep.
What happened after he used the ray gun on Eunice?
He couldn't touch things anymore.
He couldn't touch things? Like what kinds of things couldn't he touch?
He couldn't touch everything.
Everything? Well, how was he going to eat food?
He didn't?
So how does it end?
That he can eat food again.
Why? What happened?
Beast used the ray gun on him again.
Uh-huh. And he made him promise something. What did he promise?
He made him promise that he never gonna be bad again.
Yep. Well, I think that's the gist of it. I thought today's story was awesome. What'd you think?
It was pretty good. Hey, let's do a different.
Between the Bubbles is released under a Creative Commons license share and share alike style, so keep that in mind, friends. The bumper music is provided by Bike. We found it on archive.org, also provided under a share and share alike license. So thanks, friends. Have a good weekend. Happy Thanksgiving. All that kind of stuff. We'll see y'all next time.